There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Brand new week to work with. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're here. And one programming note as we go into this week. Pretty cool. First time ever for Midday Mobile. We will be live from the USS Alabama. And you'll say, no, you've been out there before. Sure, I've been at Battleship Park doing shows over the years. But on Wednesday, we are live from on the fantail of the USS Alabama. I'm doing Midday Mobile, just a one-hour show because the Scuttlebutt boys will come on right after me. So we have noon to 1 Midday Mobile, then Scuttlebutt from 1 to 2 on Wednesday. They have assured me that everything is good with getting the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit, our vehicle, up onto the fantail of the USS Alabama. So the show is not only going to be on the road, but we will be on the battleship come Wednesday. We'll talk more about that coming up. That's pretty neat stuff. All right, rain showers still working through our area. Mobile County, we've gotten them. Baldwin County, you're getting them right now. And we'll get more from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams coming up in just a little bit with your forecast for today and a look forward through the work week. All right, it is a day to start talking about this as they get back to work tomorrow in Montgomery as the legislature is back to work, of course, on a Tuesday. And the man I need to talk to before any of that happens is Todd Stacey with the Alabama Daily News. He joins us now on Midday Mobile. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sean. How's it going?
It's going good, man. It's going good. Just kind of getting an idea here in regular session. And it's funny how it seems because a lot of people, I guess, had because so much happened early on with the special session, people kind of said, OK, well, they got most of the stuff done in Montgomery. No.
No, they were just getting started. This week is they'll continue the regular session. They added a day to the week the last 2 weeks that they met, mm-hmm. just to kind of catch up because, you know, that those first 2 weeks were devoted to the special session. So they kind of added days to the calendar to speed it up a little bit. And they think now they're probably about caught up. So it'll be pretty normal from here on out. If normal is such a thing in the Alabama legislature.
Yeah, well, speaking of the new normal, how's that Republican-carried lottery bill doing?
Well, there are two of them.
Bills.
So there was a big hearing the other day in the Senate committee that handles these things, and there are two dueling lottery proposals. You got one from State Senator Jim McClendon, and it would... In addition to just calling for a lottery, it would basically grandfather in all these dog track casinos. You know, you've got dog track casinos in Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, or, you know, Greene County. You got Victoryland here in Montgomery. You've got the Mobile track there. And they've all got these bingo casinos. You know, I don't think it's bingo, but whatever. So his bill would basically grandfather them in by granting them lottery machines, lottery slot machines. And then the other bill is by Senator Greg Albritton, which is from down in those mm-hmm. neck of the woods, that is simply a lottery vote. Just a simple go to the constitutional amendment on the ballot, up or down, yes or no, on the lottery. And so that's what's being called, you know, quote-unquote a clean bill. So those are the two competing pieces of legislation. The big deal is obviously it's the casinos versus each other, right? You got the old dog track casino guys who want the McClendon bill because they want to make sure they can be in business.
Yeah, the paramutual betting.
Yeah, well, I guess that is the technical term. I don't mean old dog track casinos as a pejorative, but yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, and they don't race dogs anymore.
Right.
You know, it's mostly, yeah, they're doing it, getting horse races from other places. But they basically thrive on these machines, and this bill would help them survive, basically, by granting them lottery terminals. So, but the Porch Creeks don't want that. Porch Creek Band of Indians wants just the straight up yes or no lottery vote. And so I see them as a little more powerful than the dog track casino owners this time around. Milt McGregor's not around anymore. He passed away. He used to be a real force in the legislature, not anymore. And so if something passes, I think it would just be the straight up lottery vote.
Yeah, and that's, of course, here we go. Alabama politics, right? It's this two of them calling themselves clean lottery bills. Further confusing, people are just, they're saying, oh, are we going to vote on the lottery? And I say, well, not exactly. We're going to vote on a constitutional amendment, and then that would greenlight the second part into a lottery, but I can't even tell them what that would be. And the idea of a clean bill, of course, most people will hear that and say, okay, it only deals with one subject. So proponents of McClendon's bill are saying it's clean, because it only deals with lottery, but the part of it is it also greenlights these other facilities, these pari-mutuel betting facilities, like you just enumerated, that they could do it too, right? Which I don't understand. Would it be better to go to one of those places and do it than stop at the convenience store across the street and buy a ticket? This is not rhetorical. I'm ignorant to that.
Well, I probably should have explained that a little bit better. What they get, what those facilities get, isn't the right to sell lottery tickets. Anybody can do that. What they get is video machines. In the bill, it's called video lottery terminals. Basically, they get slot machines that are based on lotteries instead of bingo. That's what they get out of it.
And so how
they
is get that? To continue. It's, how is that bet? Is I heard them say it was like digital lottery, Todd. Which is it? Can you play lottery over and over and over again, or can they go in the machine and only play once a week? I don't understand.
Well, no, I've never seen one, but I'm imagining it's a lot like a quote unquote bingo machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're playing bingo technically. It's a slot machine, and that's what it is. That's and these casinos that are existing out there, that's how they make money now, is from people coming in to play these quote unquote electronic bingo machines. And so what McClendon's bill would do would be basically to replace electronic bingo with electronic lottery machines. So they're still slot machines, but it would legalize them under the law, and that would take away all the legal questions that have been around for 10 years or more about those machines. So that's what they get out of it.
Okay, so just to help us understand it, it would be the McClendon bill with these pari-mutuel betting people on his side behind it, and then it'd be the All Britain bill that would have the support of the Porch Creeks. That's
correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. And so those competing proposals were before a committee Thursday, and I mean, I don't think you can say any has the upper hand, but I just don't see if the Porch Creeks don't want something to pass, I think they can bring a lot of resources to bear in legislature, and so can the other side. They could probably slow down the other bill pretty good. So that's why, at the end of the day, you may not have any lottery proposal, and it has nothing to do with the lottery, and has everything to do with the casinos.
You know, I heard our mutual acquaintance there. I heard, I guess it was on his TV show over the weekend and the radio show that runs here at FM Talk 106.5, Dale Jackson, saying something that I think was very true. I don't want to get his head any bigger than it is, but he said, hey, both sides, y'all are fools because the people in Alabama don't care about the details. That's kind of an inside Montgomery thing. The people in Alabama just want to vote for a lottery. I mean, they don't, like, the nuance is lost on them.
Oh, it's true. It's absolutely true. But if you're a senator, you know, who represents the area that the green track is in. That's Bobby Singleton, mm-hmm. up there near Tuscaloosa. He's going to go to the wall to protect his folks. You know, same thing with the Porch Creeks or any other. I mean, you're going to go out there and protect your backyard. And so that's why, and this has happened before. This is not the first time this has happened. The question is, I really don't see McClendon's full-on, you know, lotteries, slot machine thing going anywhere. The question is whether the whether all Britain's quote-unquote clean lottery bill, just the straight-up vote, will survive these filibusters from those who represent casino places. I think there's a possibility. I just don't think it's all that high.
Do you think there's a possibility that it does not make it onto the ballot as a constitutional amendment?
Yeah, I think there's absolutely. There's a great chance that it gets just kind of hung up by this argument between the two different casino interests, and so people don't get so it never passes. It's a lot easier to kill a bill than it is to pass a bill.
It's going to be interesting to watch how it gets opposed and supported from the different sides. We're coming right back. More with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. I'm going to talk about how you can get his great email in your inbox each morning, and we'll get to some more things going on in Montgomery. This abortion bill could bring, and is already bringing, some national attention to the state of Alabama. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we return.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And you got to get that email in your inbox every weekday morning. Hit the refresh until it comes in, sometime probably before you get your workday started. Todd, how do they do that?
Oh, well, it's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. And, of course, you can get all your news there. But right at the top of the page, you'll see the subscribe button. Just click it, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. It's free, no cost at all. But every morning I send out the daily headlines from whether it's going on here in Montgomery in the special session or the legislative session, or up in Washington, D.C., how our delegation is handling things. All the news you need to know to start your day. Just aldailynews.com.
Yeah, one of the things people would have been reading about last week and today, and that's HB 314, Terry Collins out of Decatur's bill, she says it, everybody else says it, would be the most restrictive abortion bill in the nation, right? Alabama would have the most restrictive, and this is obviously to bring some sort of challenge, right, to Roe versus Wade.
That's right. So this would ban any abortions after a pregnancy is detected. So that's an outright ban. That, you know, the earliest you detect things is about 2 weeks, but that's practically what the law would be. But it would ban any abortions except in the case of a serious health risk to the life of the mother or an anomaly that would cause the unborn child to die anyway.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it leaves out rape and incest, right?
That's right. And typically, in abortion exceptions, you've got rape and incest. That's not in this bill, and that's on purpose. So it would without question be the strictest abortion ban in the country. Alabama law, as it is right now, restricts any abortions after 20 weeks. And that's a pretty strict law, but this would go that much further. And you're right. The point is not to, I don't think they have any delusions that this could actually be the law right away. They want it to get challenged immediately in court, which it would, and somehow go all the way up to the Supreme Court for the court to consider overturning or revisiting Roe v. Wade. Of course, that's the goal of basically everybody in the pro-life movement. They want these things to be challenged. Now that the court is a lot more conservative, they think, hey, you know, here's our opportunity. Mm-hmm. But Sean, my problem here is I just don't know if this is the kind of abortion bill that even a very conservative court would take up. An outright ban that doesn't have, you know, incest and rape as exceptions. Do you really, even though they're more conservative, do you really think the court wants that to be the case? You know, I think what much more likely are some of these other measures, like a 20-week ban or a 25-week ban. They call them, you know, viability bills. You know, they're restricted after a child is viable in the womb, or these heartbeat bills, where it's when a heartbeat is detected, and past then, it's abortion is banned. Those seem like a lot better candidates to me that the court would want to take up rather than an outright ban that doesn't have exceptions for rape and incest.
You know, and one of the things, I guess, the subtlety here that's worth talking about is that in a legislative negotiation, and we'll see it with President Trump, sometimes you ask for way more than you want and then work back towards the middle. But in something that's going to be challenged going to the judicial branch, they're going to rule, and we've seen it, very specifically on the language of whatever law it is or whatever. I mean, they're not going to and say, well, this doesn't mean this, but we will say it means this other thing. They're going to rule yay or nay on specifically this law.
Absolutely. And there have been attempts like this in the past that failed to get even taken up by the court because of exactly what you said, like technicalities, or, you know, what this wasn't the case that they thought it that should answer the question. Now, I do think some of the justices are eager to take up Roe v. Wade because and the 1992 Casey decision as well, revisit both, because I mean, just the technology has come so far, the ultrasound technology. We just know a lot more about what happens in the womb than they did back in 1972 and even in 92. So I do think one day they're going to revisit this case. And I do think eventually, especially with this court, they will allow states to restrict abortions more specifically in their own jurisdictions. I just don't know if this is the one, an outright ban. It would very much surprise me if this is the case that they took up to have a Roe v. Wade revisit. Then again, you never know. But as far as the state house politics goes, you've got a lot of pro-life advocates that say, "Hey, it's all or nothing." Mm-hmm. You know, they don't. They're kind of two different sorts of pro-life advocates. One group says we need incremental change. We've got to have, you know, every small victory saves lives.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, you have some that say, no, it's all or nothing. It's, you know, there must be absolutely no abortions, and we will not support anything that ever would lead to an abortion. So,
But they both want to get loud. They both want to get to the same place, Todd. It's just there's a difference in opinion how to get there, right?
Absolutely, and I'm certainly not being critical of either. That's just how the politics work. That's why these bills, one Senate bill, one House bill, have 70 co-sponsors in the House and Senate. So, I mean, people are eager to sign up to sign their names for these bills. Now, I did hear a little bit of hesitation from some lawmakers about not having the exceptions in there. In fact, in our report on it, one lawmaker told us that he would expect that to probably get put back in the bill, you know, put in the bill somehow. Also, they're talking about Cam Ward up in Alabaster's talking about an amendment that says, well, we're going to make sure that taxpayer money doesn't get spent defending this in court because we're trying to send a message. So maybe some of these outside groups should pay for the litigation. So it's not going to pass the way it's written right now. There will be some amendments.
All right. Also, it's today is the same as yesterday, is the same as last year. A bill to deal with ethics here in the state of Alabama. I guess let's do the two parts. First of all, a bill to exempt economic developers from state ethics rules governing lobbyists has passed the House overwhelmingly, you write. Tell me about this.
That's right. If you remember last year, there was a big dust-up about revising the ethics code to make sure that economic developers, that really means like these site selectors, aren't forced to register as lobbyists under the ethics code. It all comes from this draft advisory opinion that was written that said, all these economic developers, they need to register as lobbyists. Well, what that does is, if you're a site selector for a, you know, Toyota Mazda up in North Alabama, or for an Airbus, or for just some of these major projects that come to the state, it's all done very secretly. They come in under a code name. They're not going to tell anybody who they work for. And if we force them to go register as lobbyists and disclose their client name, they're just going to take Alabama off the list of states to go visit. So it was a real problem. Pretty much, the unanimous Economic Development Committee said they needed this change. They changed it last year, put a one-year expiration date on it, and so this makes it permanent in the law. And there really wasn't the debate that there was last year. It's pretty unanimous at this point to pass it.
But I remember, though, some of this discussion, what if there's somebody who has dual roles, that somebody is doing this, but they're also a legislator or something like that? Is there...
Oh, absolutely. And that was a big point of, I would say, misinformation last year. So this bill, very specifically, I went and made sure it was in there. It says that if you're a public official, that includes legislators or city councilmen or anybody else, then this doesn't apply to you. Then you still must register, you still must follow the ethics code 100%. And that's an important part of that bill that gives them a lot more confidence that, okay, this isn't just creating a giant loophole.
Okay, so this would not apply to senators or House members or somebody like that.
Right. They could not use this to claim they're exempt from the law. And that's very specific in the bill.
All right, just get started on this, but we're pretty close to the bottom of the hour news break. But the other part of this, speaking of ethics, you write the new bill by Senator Albritton would change the paradigm of Alabama gift-giving rules. Are we back into the de minimis stuff? What are we doing here?
Yeah, well, real quick, back in 2010, big ethics overhaul, because that, all the corruption stuff was going on back then with the two-year scandal. And the legislature tightened up what people can give as gifts, lobbyists can give as gifts. And at the time, one thought was, well, hey, it doesn't really matter how much they give. We just need to know every gift that is given.
Right.
And so that's this proposal. I don't expect it to go anywhere.
All right. Coming right back, more Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Make sure you sign up for that email. And we'll get into more of what's going on in Montgomery. And Senate 2020. Last week it was Matt Gaetz. Now it's Tommy Tuberville. Say what?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad you're here, and enjoy talking to this guy, Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. You got to get signed up for that email, and absolutely look at it every day, especially during session in Montgomery, when there's something new every day, and sometimes multiple new things every day. Is that fair enough to say?
Oh yeah, look, especially now that we're kind of into the thick of it, there are bills popping up all over the place. Of course, we're not going to write about every single bill. That would be impossible. But we try to tell you the high points and what to expect day to day. For instance, this week is going to be the budgets. They're going to get into the general fund budget. That means prisons. And there's a plus up for prisons. But hey, if you saw that prison report come from Department of Justice the other day, that may open up the conversation about how much we're funding our prisons and what kind of conversations we need to have about that.
Yeah, I had Senator Cam Ward on again, and he and I were talking about, and we kind of went back through trying to remember the first time he came on my show talking about it. It was back when Governor Bentley, former Governor Bentley, and his task force that he put together to deal with Alabama prisons. It was a big deal back then. It's funny to hear a lot of people talking about it like it's brand new news now, but this has been the sword of Damocles hanging over the state for quite a while. But now with this DOJ report, and remember, that's a DOJ that's working at the behest of a Republican president, and it was damning.
It was, it's hard to imagine how it could be any worse. The report went through, instances of murder being classified as natural death causes. Really violent, sexually violent prisons, just generally unsafe conditions. And, it's the law that you have to protect your prisoners. It's easy for folks to say, it's just prisoners. What, they're in there for a reason. Well, no, it's the law that we have to protect these prisoners. We have to provide for their care, and it's not an empty threat. So, DOJ, of course, we've already got a federal judge breathing down our necks, And so now DOJ comes and says this. I mean, we're hanging by a thread as far as waiting for a federal takeover to happen. And you know what that means. If we are taken over by the federal government, that means prisoner releases, and it means automatic tax increases to pay for better prisons. I don't think anybody in the state wants that. And so Senator Ward is right to be addressing this. And you're right, man. He's been on this for a while.
Years and years.
So it's not an easy problem to address, but we've got to do something.
Yeah, I mean, and I pointed out the other day, as we have several times in these discussions, I said, look at California. Look what happened in California. That's what we could be faced with. And it's like you just laid out, Todd. It is being forced to turn out inmates because of numbers of people, not because they're rehabilitated or served their sentence. They're just turned out. And then the state is required by the feds to spend the money to do these things, whether it's build new prisons or, you know, expand prisons. And you have to pay for it. You don't get the choice. The feds tell you, and then the state has to come up with money.
Yeah. So it would be a very painful situation. And, you know, it hasn't happened yet, but between the courts and the executive branch, man, we're in a tight spot. But they gave us 49 days to basically fix this problem, and I'm very interested to see. But it comes right as the budgets are being discussed this week. So you might hear a lot of talk about that on the House floor.
Now, okay, what about something you and I have talked a bit about this year, is this idea where Governor Ivey could use a executive power here basically to have a independent company build the prisons and then we lease space from them?
That's right, and they're moving forward with that. So they've put out a request for proposals asking, you know, any of these development or construction firms to say, okay, we have a basic idea of what we want. They want three brand new prisons that can house pretty much the entire population of the maximum security prisons, and the way they would do that is to ask these companies to bid on it. Here's our proposal. Here's what it would cost, and the state would go ahead and start funding that via an executive branch contract. Now, the legislature could hold that up, but they couldn't do away with it. And the reason, I mean, I know that sounds kind of strange. How can the governor just contract for $900 million worth of construction?
Right.
But that's perfectly legal, but they do have to pay for it. And the way they propose paying for it is once these prisons are up and going, then we would start leasing them and the costs from the existing prisons go away. If that makes any sense. So yeah, another company, a private company, would build it, and then we would begin leasing it from those companies. That's the plan, at least.
And yeah, the idea is that that manpower is the biggest cost, and these new prisons, you would have the ability for fewer correctional officers to watch more prisoners, right? I mean, that's one of the cost savings.
That's right, and it's not just the number. Who knows where the number would go? What's killing them right now is overtime, because they're having to pay, you know, extreme overtime costs because they have so few officers and they're trying to recruit and everything. Well, that's bad in a lot of ways. It's costs adding up, but also, do we really want a bunch of, you know, overworked, tired, you know, corrections officers walking around these prisons? It's not a good situation. So yeah, they'll actually save a lot of money just through overtime. A lot of it is deferred maintenance because these prisons, some of them were built in the 30s. You know, they're not modern by any stretch, and so we spend millions of dollars a year just kind of keeping them up. So I mean, look, I sat in the meeting. It added up. It was a legit plan. It adds up. Of course, you can criticize it however you want, but at least the governor's trying something to say, okay, the probably the biggest problem is our facilities. Let's fix that. We can do that. And I expect there to be news in that regard probably in the next week or so, in terms of if whether or not they've gotten the proposal and whether it's legit and whether they can move forward with it.
All right. And you're breaking this news last week, but I guess it's now official since Tubbs 2020 has launched that Tommy Tuberville is running for U.S. Senate. Walk us through this.
Oh man, yeah, I got the tip. I guess it was Wednesday evening, so I broke it Thursday morning via our paid subscription platform called Inside Alabama Politics. And that's that, you know, Tommy Tuberville, former Auburn coach, running for U.S. Senate. Of course, he dabbled with, you know, he put his toe in the water for running for governor last time around. Yep. But that was before Bentley resigned and Kay Ivey was, you know, assumed office. And so after that happened, he was kind of satisfied that either, you know, he wasn't going to win or that she was doing a good enough job. But he's back. And he really wants to run for U.S. Senate. I talked to him, last December about that, about just whether he wanted to ever run again, and he definitely sounded like he did. So, look, this is legit. He's got a website up. He's got a logo that costs some money. He wants to run, and he now becomes the second candidate announced.
I mean, it's wild that, yeah, he does say in his tweet, "I've heard your concerns and hope for a better tomorrow." You know, after more than a year of listening to Alabama citizens, I remember during the gubernatorial foray, he was talking about he was going around the state and listening. Now I guess he takes those concerns and he will take them to Washington. Okay, name value, right? He's got it. He's got name recognition in the state of Alabama, but what else does he bring to the game here? I mean, you look at experience. Bradley Burns got him beat hands down, right? Or whoever else might get in. If it's down the road, it's Del Marsh or it's Bo Brooks, or I mean, go down the list.
Yeah, it's, you know, what he's hoping for is to get that or capture that coveted outsider lane. You know, there are different lanes for political office. Sometimes it's the experience card or this very conservative or whatever. But there's that outsider lane that I think he wants to get in. And look, he might have a shot. Like you said, some people can't stand politicians. I've seen polling that shows, you know, upwards of 60% of Republicans would prefer for their candidates not to have served before. I don't know if I necessarily buy that. I think that's just something maybe you tell a pollster. But yeah, there is definitely a contingent of voters out there that does not like establishment politicians or just politicians in general and would want an outsider candidate. So if that's what kind of election it turns into, then hey, he's got a shot. But you're right. He's got to deal with the experience deficit. I mean, he's never served in office. He's never, yeah, sure, being the head coach is a pressure cooker.
Right.
But, you know, knowing the policy in and out, knowing how to use the political process to get things back to Alabama and the U.S. Senate. Those are different things. And if I was a Bradley Byrne, those would be the questions I'd ask in a debate.
Yeah. What about, too, before we wrap up here, last week's chatter about Matt Gaetz out of Northwest Florida considering running for Senate 2020 for Alabama? I mean, I talked to Secretary of State John Merrill about it last week at an event, and he said, you know, legally, Sean, he can do it. I said, but why?
I couldn't tell whether it was serious or whether it was, you know, maybe some low-level staffers in his office just having a laugh, you know, floating this out there just to see what they could get to bite. But yeah, I was pretty surprised. I was actually sitting there in the State House with a bunch of reporters, and I was like, well, guys, looks like it's going to be Senator Gaetz for Alabama. And one of them quipped to me like, oh, I finally know how to spell or know how to pronounce that. So yeah, I think he may be overestimating his appeal to the voters of Alabama. Of course, you know, he's the big Trump guy. He is like, I mean, there are different levels of, you know, defending Trump, you know, doing everything you can to defend Trump. And then there's Matt Gaetz, because he, you know, he goes to a whole different level of sycophant. And so anyway, it would have been interesting for all those people to be in the same primary, but I think he wisely backed off.
There it is. Get that news and a whole lot more over at aldailynews.com. Or remind folks once again, Todd, how they get signed up to get that email in their inbox.
Yeah, please do sign up. I'd love to have you a part of the family. It's just aldailynews.com and click subscribe right there at the top. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. Look forward to having a conversation with you every day over the daily news.
Good stuff, Todd. We'll talk soon. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
1246 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. We're coming right back. We'll grab some of your calls and text at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, another bill to throw into the mix here, too. Now, we'll talk about this in depth this weekend on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors with Mike Gordon. I host the show Saturday mornings at 7. Plus, you can catch the replays Saturday evening and on Sunday morning and the podcast out there as well. This is the baiting bill. It's like the pay-to-bait bill is kind of what I call it. This is passed through the Senate. SB 66 is the bill. I'll put the link up on the Facebook page for the station and for the outdoor show as well here, probably during the top of the hour news. We'll put that up. But yeah, it's the pay-to-bait bill, and it's passed the House, or passed the Senate. And I guess it'll go for some adjustment in the House. It passed with, 28. Look at that. 28 yeses, and the rest were absent. Interesting how that worked out. No, there aren't any no votes. The people, I guess, for no votes end up just being absent for that vote. I want to hear what you think about that as well. We'll talk about that more coming up this week. And like I said, this weekend in depth on the Outdoor Show. All right, 1253 FM Talk 106.5. Big thank you, Todd Stacey. What do you think about that? A couple things. Tubbs for Gov. That was last time. This is Tubbs 2020 Senate. Well, Tuberville, because of that name recognition, how far does that put him through? Would you vote for a Tommy Tuberville because of him not being a politician? And is Senate the right place to go to not be a politician? Because you can say, hey, look at President Trump. He wasn't a politician. He went into the top office in the land. But if the game's going to be played the way the game is played in Washington still, do you want somebody that has the experience and, you know, the connections, or do you want somebody to start off new? And that's not rhetorical. That's a fair question. You might say, yeah, we need to take the lick, send somebody up there who is not connected in any way, and let them forge a trail that's not muddied by others. Or you may say, they're going to get eaten alive up there. I'd like to hear from you on that. We can talk about that at 343-0106. Also coming up in the second hour of the show, two things you got to pay attention to. Number one, coming up at 1:30, Mobile City Councilman John Williams will join us and talk more about something he had mentioned in the past. He has mentioned it on the show in the past, and then I saw Steve Alexander over at Fox 10 had posted up a story about what is the future of the Hank or Hank Aaron Stadium, and he gets into an interview there with Councilman Williams and says, you know, the city leases the land that the Hank is on, and by the contract, I believe, if we don't have a AA affiliate baseball team, the city of Mobile has to return the land back to the owner in the manner in which they found it. That means demolishing the Hank, right? I don't know if it means restoring the wetlands, but demolishing the Hank. So you would have to do this. So what happens? I mean, now you're really under the gun to try to find some kind of ball club to put in there. So it's not even like all those ideas we had, you know, everything from my kooky idea about putting a Top Golf in there to something else. Even if you did that, if it's not a AA baseball team, it sounds like we have to turn the land back over to the developer. So we'll get some more details. We'll get into this at 1:30 with Councilman John Williams. Also coming up in just a couple minutes, Work Zone Awareness Week is this week, and we're going to talk to Representative from Aldott more about this Work Zone Awareness Week and what you can do and pay attention. You know, it's been deadly on our roadways, even lately, for people working on those roadways. All right, grab a call or two here before we go to the news. And Brian is in Daphne and up first. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Sean, what's going on, brother?
Nothing much, man. What you doing? What do you think? Tuberville? Well, Tuberville 2020?
Well, I would vote for Tuberville. I mean, I've looked back, and you know, I've lived here for about 15 years now. I've been in Baldwin County. And I try to think, looking at what has Bradley Byrne really done for us as a representative? So why should he step up and be a senator? And it is good to have some new people sometimes at the same time. I mean, and they're talking about if Tuberville got eaten alive. Look, if you can go coach in the SEC and do what he does, and I know that sounds crazy, but that's like an executive legislative job to do that. I don't think he'd have any problem at all. He just doesn't seem like the kind of guy to ever back down in football, so why would he back down in the Senate?
Now, I agree with you wholeheartedly on the organization. I mean, if you're head coach, you're doing it right. Some people will argue some head coaches don't delegate and they do everything, but if you're doing it right as a head coach, yeah, you get the delegation, getting people to do this, that, and the other. But I will argue back the other way, too, just to say Congressman Burns gotten some pretty big things done. Now, that doesn't mean you need to vote for him instead of Tuberville, but if you look at LCS contracts and some big, big issues for our area, he has gotten some significant things done pretty quickly as a freshman up there in Washington. But the Tuberville thing, that the thing that makes you say what you said, I think a lot of people, Brian, say, yeah, I want somebody who's not connected. It's the same weapon. That sword cuts both ways, right? Somebody's going to use it against him and say, well, he doesn't know how to do business up there. He's not going to get anything done. He's going to be a lamb to the slaughter.
Well, that's what's wrong now. There's too many up there who are worrying about doing business for themselves instead of business for us. I mean, look at the people, even on the Democratic side, have been up there for 30 and 40 years. I mean, even Mitch McConnell, who you get tired of because he's the same old song you dance over and over and over and over again. You know, you can equate it to maybe the guy who's been married to the woman for 40 years and he loves her, but his eyes still wander a little bit because he'll be looking at the same woman for 40 years. Isn't it time finally for somebody new and different to do something for us and to actually have some backbone and stand up to the people who are trying to ruin our country?
There's Brian. Brian thinks it's the state of Alabama may need to look for, something new. Appreciate the call, Brian. All right. We'll talk about that more going forward. Also, I'd like you to go over and check out our online opinion poll question on the front page of FMTalk1065.com, where there's all kind of stuff going on. Podcast links and our show schedule links for the week. Also, you can check out the three big thing top news stories over there as well. But we'd like you to vote in the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Would you support a federal gas tax increase with funds going towards infrastructure? Yep, that's something they're talking about right now in Washington, as President Trump had talked about infrastructure work. Seems like, at least that we've heard, it's President Trump and House and Senate Democrats that are agreeing on this. What do you think? You can vote online. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. Hour number two of Midday Mobile. That's happening next.